Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, September 25th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Man, what a crazy, crazy, crazy day. A lot of things are happening here, and lots to talk about today, so I'm going to get right into the market today with market prices and a little pressure on gold today. It did reverse itself a little bit. 1147 down 750. 1147 down 750. Silver, $15.20 down 05. Platinum was down 6 at 952. But we still saw some positive movement in palladium, up 8 at $667. USDX today down 0.08 at 96.18. Crude oil up 0.65 at 45.56. And what I call the Pope rally. We have the Dow up 113 points today at 16,314. The NASDAQ was down 47 at 46.86. S&P basically unchanged at 1931. So the Dow was very volatile this week. The markets were very volatile, but for the week, the Dow is almost at the same spot as it was a week ago. The NASDAQ is lower, and the S&P is also lower from a week ago. So seems like it was such a hectic week, a lot of changes and big moves and volatility, folks. And, you know, the volatility, it's not good for the markets. That tends to bring in more negative numbers than positive. You have the 10-year yield, 2.17, down 0.5. Euro, 1.12, and that was up 0.21. And I think the European markets pretty much are carrying the same glory that our markets are doing, only they fared better than our markets did. London and Germany were up both 2.5%, Germany being a little bit stronger. Japan was up 1.75%. Hong Kong basically unchanged. Not a lot of changes there. So I think today there was a House Speaker John Boehner.
Yep.
Informed the Republicans that he would step down at the end of October.
Not just step down.
He resigned.
He's resigning.
Right.
By not just leaving the position of speaker. He could have been in Manhattan and stuck around as in Congress, but he's saying, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of discussion about booting him out and getting him out of there. But what I found interesting, and the timing is everything. To me, the timing is what is extraordinary about this. And he's a good friend of the Bushes. His longtime friend is Jeb Bush. And he pushed Bush to jump into this presidential race. And, you know, he's lobbied for his friend, Jeb Bush. And so it makes me wonder how much of the Bush presidency and his campaign gave Boehner the decision to do his resignation. I mean, that's just...
It's not just Jeb Bush. You know, it's also Donald Trump. You know, we kind of forget this. It's a couple of months now, so we've forgotten. Trump marks a big divergence in what's going on in the Republican Party. And what Trump represents is a rejection of the leadership, the established leadership of the Republican Party. And people around the country said, yeah, let's go with Trump, yeah. And when they do that, they're effectively rejecting Boehner and the other people that are elitists in the Republican Party. I think what he's seeing, he's just saying, look, he's tired of fighting the tide. He's out of here. Quartz Magazine had a headline. I didn't read the article. But their headline was, John Boehner's resignation shows the wheels have come off the Republican Party. And I think there's a point to that. This is more than Boehner is wore out. Yeah, I don't doubt he's wore out on all of this stuff.
I don't think it's...
But I think it's also a situation where the Republican Party is changing. And now who's going to take his place? Who's the next Speaker of the House? We don't even have anybody in mind. You know, they mentioned that Kevin McCarthy of California appears to be the favorite, but there's nobody who's really... Where's the hand-picked replacement? Where's the guy that should have been groomed if the party leadership was still in control?
I heard Paul Ryan was another name that was thrown out. But... interesting what I heard, and I had hoped to clarify it before the program. I don't know if you know, but they were talking about replacing Boehner with another elected official. But that is not, I mean, you can actually bring someone in.
What do you mean, bring someone in?
To replace Boehner that is not an elected official. And I believe it was Newt Gingrich they were interviewing. And the interviewer said something to that sort. Well, you know, they can, you know, they'll need to bring in an elected official or not. And Newt said, well, that's not going to happen. And I thought, well, how interesting.
You mean they're going to bring in a replacement? He's going to resign
in
October. They are going to, where's he from, Florida?
Sure, where he's from.
Ohio. So then Ohio, the governor of Ohio or the state legislature, I assume the governor, I'm not sure, he's going to appoint someone to take Boehner's place on October 30th. And what you're saying is that maybe he doesn't have to, it's not going to be someone who's elected to go to Congress.
It will be someone who is elected, but it doesn't have to be.
You mean it will be someone, it won't be someone who's elected to Congress. You're saying it will be someone who holds elective office.
Correct.
At this point at another level. Could be the Secretary of State of Ohio.
But
could be the Attorney General. Could be some state legislature, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But
Governor.
But it was interesting that Newt said, well, that will never happen. And I just thought, you know what? That is such a controlled and manipulated, you know, it's all for them. It's all for these politicians. It's all for the career politician. And they really don't care about what goes on. But another thing about Boehner is his timing is, of course, the budget and the Planned Parenthood. They're trying to defund that. And if they if they can't get that defunded, then you have a government shutdown based on that. So he's leaving at a time. This is going to be big, I think. Now, we saw government shutdown not too long ago for a couple of weeks or so forth, and it's no big deal. You know, you hooray when government is shut down, but, you know, these were short periods of time. Depending on how long it can be shut down, you know.
What's the record? What's the record on how long a government can be shut down, Melody?
But
we'll
the
call
problem,
Guinness, and it'll give us something to shoot for.
But it's not that. When, if you would have a government shutdown for any length of time, then everything else falls apart, too. And we often talk about the black swan. That would bring, you know, everything into view and to have the collapse, and that could be one of them. That could be the black swan. Even though you cheer for, you know, the government shutdown, things will follow if it's shut down longer than possible or longer than...
Yeah, there's maybe a limit on it, but it's the sort of thing where you just sit back and... yeah, it might be a little bumpy there for a while, but...
It just depends.
This feels to me like, okay, the government is shut down. We're going to have a little trouble here now. But let's start having some parades. It would be like Mardi Gras kind of, the government shut down, the government shut down. You know, break out the bands.
Well, I understand you, the gist of it all, but I mean, it could bring something that the markets and everything else is not anticipating, and therefore you could have some unseen problems in the markets and Wall Street and so forth.
I mean, I understand.
Yeah.
That.
So, and I believe that it's going to be, you know, whatever happens, I believe the debt, the black swan is the debt. I mean,
yeah, it's the one thing they can't get around.
They can't get around. It's the one thing we know. It's the truth. It's not the debt is not something that someone is out there saying, oh, you know, it's going to happen. It is happening. And,
like I said the other day, the whole idea, if you have to have confidence in the system, right, and the government is constantly fighting to maintain confidence in the economy and confidence in the presidency and confidence. What is the confidence finally all about? It's confidence that the debt will be paid. And once people realize, oh my gosh, the debt can't be paid, and confidence starts to wither on that basis, then we're going to see some serious changes in this country because we live in a debt-based monetary system. And once people lose confidence in the promise that these debts are going to be paid, all of a sudden, now we're going down. That, to my mind, that's the beginning of the domino effect. That's where we should begin to see the dominoes start clicking. Clickety, clickety, click. And they're going to cover, you know, you've got those dominoes spread out all over the basketball court. And you tip one of them, and next thing you know, they're going upstairs, downstairs, in circles, and reset, and just... Vroom. Lose confidence in paying off the debt. And it is the inevitable reality because the debt is too great to be repaid. Huh? It can't be repaid. And people don't understand that, and they don't get that necessarily. And they don't understand the consequences. If the debt is repudiated, you wipe out a correlative amount of paper assets. You know, people sit back and yay, they wipe out the $18 trillion national debt. A lot of people say, yeah, that's a great idea. But if they do, they're going to knock out $18 trillion in correlative paper assets. Bonds, for example, that memorialize the debt. Repudiate the debt, repudiate the assets. Now what? How does the country, we can get along without the debt, you would think. But nobody bothers to think we can't get along without the correlative paper assets. And so we're caught in this position where we can't repudiate the debt. The debt is too big to be repaid. It has to be repudiated. But if we do, we wipe out the paper assets. This is the fundamental argument that we've been advancing on this program, I don't know, several years now. Why you want to get out of paper. Paper is a debt instrument. All of it is debt instruments. If you got a piece of paper, if it's a stock, it's a bond, it's a pension fund, it's a bank account book. It's a paper debt instrument at a time where the world's debt is so enormous that it can't all be paid. And my guesstimate is 80 to 90% of it won't be paid, but at least 50%. So if you're holding a piece of paper and treating it as an asset, you have a 50% probability at minimum, all right? And in my estimation, an 80, 90% probability that that piece of paper is going to turn out to be virtually worthless, which is why we tell people, get away from the debt instruments. There's too much debt. It can't be paid. What can't be paid won't be paid. If you're going to hang on to the paper, like make sure it's soft and absorbent so at least you get a little use out of it. But in the end, not necessarily tomorrow, not necessarily this year. Who knows when? Don't know. But it has to happen that way. The debt can't be paid. It won't be paid. Predominantly won't be paid. Some of it will. You might have a piece of paper that's going to be okay. I might have one. Everybody might have one. But the odds are running against all of us. That's part of the reason. Again, get into something tangible. Get into something like gold, silver. Right? Something that is not a debt instrument. So, yes, Melody?
So, yes. And, yeah, I mean, so I believe that's the area in which we're going to have the biggest. I mean, that's something that we know about. And, you know, here we are at the end of October. You have the Pope speak at the UN. We've talked about the Shemitah. We talked about all these other dates and things that people projected. And it's just like, well, there's a few more that are coming about. But, you know, to me, it is the debt. That's something that's real.
That's something that's real, and it can't be escaped or avoided.
Right.
And it has to be escaped, and it has to be avoided, and it can't be. Mm-hmm. There's the problem. You know, I've talked about this. I've mentioned it on the program before, but it's still, to me, a good insight. You go back into the Old Testament, and they had a jubilee every 50 years where they canceled all the debt. Right? And some people would sit back and say, well, we could have a jubilee here, too, and we could cancel all the debt. No, you can't.
Nope.
You can't, because back in the Old Testament, they had an asset-based monetary system, an asset-based economy. If you cancel all the debt, if I borrowed 10 ounces of gold from Melody and the Jubilee came around, I wouldn't have to pay Melody the 10 ounces of gold. All right? Melody'd be out the 10 ounces because all the debt's canceled on the Jubilee. But the gold is still there in the community. It's there in the economy. The gold hasn't disappeared. All that's happened is Melody lost 10 ounces of gold because she loaned it to me and the Jubilee came along and I get a break and Melody loses the gold. All right, that's a problem for Melody. But the economy is just as good as it was before. Only difference is 10 ounces of gold moved from Melody to me. All right? Today, we have a debt-based monetary system. And we can't, all of our wealth, or our paper wealth at least, is denominated, it's in these paper debt instruments, and when we wipe out the debt, we wipe out the wealth. It's not like if we have a Jubilee and Melody has loaned me $10,000, we don't just wipe out my debt. It's not just a matter I cancel my debt to Melody of $10,000. It's a matter of the $10,000 is vaporized. Melody's got a piece of paper that's with my signature on it that says, I owe you $10,000. And Melody's treating that as an asset. And when it turns out the debt can't be paid or it won't be paid or we're having a Jubilee, that paper asset becomes worthless. And there's the problem. And that's where we are caught between the rock and the hard place. We can't pay the debt. We don't have any assets to... I mean, this is a terrible situation. And it's hard. It's difficult to imagine. It's difficult to comprehend on some levels because it's hard to believe. Not because it's so complex, but because you look at it and say, oh, no. The people in Washington, they wouldn't have put us in this kind of a situation, would they? Listen, yeah, they did. Yeah. And now, sooner or later, we are going to pay through the nose. We're going to suffer. But when? This year? Next year? I don't know. but it is built into a debt-based monetary system, which is irrational to begin with. Doesn't make sense that we treat debt as a primary form of wealth. I understand that you can make an argument that, oh, look, I've got a bond and the government's good for it.
Yeah, okay.
All right? Well, they were good for it once upon a time. But the time is coming when they're not going to be. And the only way you protect yourself, get some gold and silver and get something tangible, food, ammunition, rifles. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for Thyme Tincture NT to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners that we do have silver. If you're interested in purchasing silver, immediate delivery. We do have the Perth Mint Kangaroos, and they're really kind of neat. And for those of you who have a concern about counterfeiting, they microengrave the coins to prevent that. Plus, you can buy them in boxes of 250. So for those of you who can never afford the big boxes of the Silver Eagles at 500, this gives you the opportunity to get a sealed box of 250. And there's
what's the ballpark price? $500 on, or excuse me, $5,000?
What?
What's the ballpark price on 250 of the kangaroos?
Oh, you're probably looking at around $4,500.
Mm-hmm.
That's just off the cuff, but without actually pricing. So you're looking around $4,500. But you get 10 tubes, 25 per tube, and then each tube within the box, they are hologrammed sealed. So, you know, again, you get your box and you can tell that they haven't been tampered with. And these are all done by the Perth Mint. And it's not like you have some of these dealers out there that wrap their Silver Eagle tubes in some cellophane and slap on their own label and says, oh, these are originally right from the mint. And then they charge more for those coins. Well, anybody can do that. I can do it, but I'm not, you know, I can put some cellophane around a tube of 20 Silver Eagles, never open it from the mint and send it out and charge you more. But these are actually hologram sealed by the Perth Mint, a little bit different. So give us a call. We have them in inventory. They can be delivered next week. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We still have Morgan Silver Dollars. Their price is beginning to move up also. Gold, of course, there's no problems in availability with gold. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
Got an article here from a French agency, French Press, and the headline is U.S. economic growth hit 3.9% in second quarter. The U.S. economy struck a peppy 3.9% annual growth rate in the second quarter, faster than originally thought, and providing more fuel for a Fed rate hike, according to the Commerce Department. The new data confirmed the economy's rebound from the first quarter stall. Now, we're talking about the second quarter is up to 3.9%. The new data confirmed the economy's rebound from the first quarter stall, although since then it has settled to a more modest pace as global growth has slowed. Still, U.S. growth for all of 2015 is expected to be a modest 2.1%. in the Federal Reserve's latest forecast. Well, generally speaking, that's pretty chipper news. I mean, this is, all right, they're saying, look, things are moving along, could be better, they're not terrible, things are doing okay. You look at that, and then here's another, I didn't write down the source of this,
it's been all in all the main news.
China's economic slowdown and cheap oil are killing more American jobs. That's the headline. Caterpillar announced on Thursday the job cuts could exceed 10,000 through 2018. Now, Caterpillar always means something to me because I grew up in a family. My dad had an excavation business, had a little excavation business, but we had a Caterpillar, and it was the pride of our little business and the rest of that sort of thing. And I like Cat. I have liked Caterpillar probably 60 years now. It's been something special to me. I pay a little attention to Caterpillar. It is a powerful, iconic American corporation. Right? From my perspective, it's hard for me to imagine them doing wrong. And when I see that they say job cuts 10,000 through 2018, they're not talking about. On the one hand, we could say, well, they're not going to have 10,000 job cuts this month. That's good. This quarter, that's good. Even this year, that's good. But on the other hand, Caterpillar's announcement implies that they don't expect the economy to regain its strength for at least another 2 years, maybe three, before they get back up to where they were just a few months ago. Up to 5,000 employees will lose jobs between now and the end of 2016. The moves are aimed at cutting $1.5 billion in annual costs as global growth outlook continues to darken. Now, they're not just saying, you know, we talk about China. China, oh, they're having a little problem with the stock market. They'll get over it, and things will be back to normal in just a little while. Caterpillar saying, no, we don't think so. Things are not coming back to normal for a couple of years, if they ever get back to normal, whatever normal is. Caterpillar is heavily exposed to the turbulence ripping through the world's economy. Nearly 10% of the company's revenue is generated in China, where the country's economy is shifting from infrastructure-led growth to being more consumer-driven. The shift has led to a dramatic economic slowdown, and many anticipate China will continue to stumble as its economy goes through a difficult transition. Now, I think that's the case. And the reason I'm presenting this is because we've got the one hand, we've got the happy news, the economy's up 3.9% in the second quarter, yay! Not up quite so much this quarter, but it's okay, yay! And then Caterpillar says it's got a couple of years of bad business in front of it. Is anticipating. Now, who do you think is giving us straight information? That's my point on this. They're arguing that as China's demand for raw materials dropped, it sent prices careening from everything from crude oil to copper and to iron ore. That's commodities are down because China and the world economy is no longer hitting on all eight cylinders, and we're not consuming the commodities the way we do when the economy's running hot. I can remember reading a book on the Kondratiev wave by the Russian economist, I believe it was Nikolai. I don't remember his first name, but Kondratiev. He identified a 50-year wave back, in the 1930s, if I recall correctly, business cycle. And we go up and we go down. We go into booms, bust, boom, bust, on a 50-year cycle. I can remember him explaining in that book, and this goes back. I read this, I know, in the 60s. And it made me appreciate that one of the hallmarks of economic depression is that prices for commodities fall. Right? And they are telling us China's demand for raw materials, that is to say commodities, has dropped. It sent prices careening from everything from crude oil to copper, iron ore. That's led mining and oil exploration companies to cut back on spending on heavy equipment Caterpillar produces. We are facing a convergence of challenging marketplace conditions in key regions and industry sectors, mainly in mining and energy. Key sectors, mining and energy, going down. Heavy equipment going down. Government says, yay, 3.9% in the second quarter. Caterpillar says, boo, who are you going to believe? Given these challenges, Caterpillar dimmed its 2015 sales targets and warned next year's revenue could decline by 5%. That would mark the first time in Caterpillar's 90-year history the sales have declined for 4 straight years. That tells you something. Now, it may be that Caterpillar has simply been mismanaged. And because of management errors, it's come on 4 consecutive years of sales decline. Could be. I'm disinclined to believe that. I think what Caterpillar has done, if they've been mismanaged, it's only because people didn't anticipate how long the alleged recovery would take to get here. And they have made certain assumptions that were perhaps more optimistic than reasonable, than objective. But first time in Caterpillar's 90-year history, the sales have declined for 4 straight years. That tells you something. It doesn't prove anything, but it's another one of those leaves in the breeze. Tells you, whoops, an iconic American industry has had 4 consecutive years of sales declines. Caterpillar said the 10,000 job cut estimate includes potential closing of more than 20 unspecified manufacturing facilities. Something's going on here. Caterpillar is a superb machine. It has been. I've never heard, I haven't heard, maybe there's reports out that Caterpillar has done something to its mufflers like Volkswagen did, and they've got some sort of a problem. But my understanding of Caterpillar has always been they've done great quality control, and they've made a magnificent product. And yet, they've maybe closed down 20 manufacturing facilities. It's been particularly rough stretch for Caterpillar. Earlier this week, the company said retail sales of its machinery slumped 11% between June and August. Between June and August, we're talking 2, maybe 3 months. You know, an 11% sales slump in 2 or 3 months for something, again, this is the kind of thing you look at and you say, uh-oh, there's a problem here. And maybe it's only for Caterpillar, but I'm inclined to think that Caterpillar is something like the canary in the coal mine that's telling us, look, there's a problem here. Employment fallout related to falling, all this represents the latest employment fallout related to falling commodity prices, which I mentioned earlier. The idea of the Kondratieff wave was the first time I'd heard and understood that when you go into a depression, you have falling commodity prices. And that's a bad thing for debtors. If you're in debt and you're going into an economic depression, you owe money. You're not going to be able to pay your debt because you have to pay it off with more valuable currency. Right? Deflation is terrible for debtors, and we have a debt-based monetary system. Part of the reason why the government and the Fed, they want inflation, inflation. We've got to have inflation. Somebody give me some inflation. Why? Because the debt-based monetary system, it can work. It can at least appear to work. As long as there is some solid inflation that's reducing the value of the currency and thereby encouraging people to borrow and go deeper into debt so they can pay off their debt with cheaper dollars. But if we go into deflation, they're paying off their debt with more expensive dollars, which can push a lot of people into bankruptcy. All of which is consistent, again, with an economic depression. And one of the things that you can guarantee, I mean, who's the biggest debtor in the world? Government of the United States. We've already talked earlier in the program about the idea that the government will not, and not just the government, even the private sector, but government in particular, the debt is too great to be repaid. Under normal circumstances, it's too great to be repaid. But if we're going into deflationary circumstances, it means it's really too great to be repaid. And if they can't manage to fire up inflation and perhaps hyperinflation in the very near future, the government's going to have to be, it's going to be put in a position by deflation, by an economic depression, where they have to admit they can't pay the debt, which brings us back to the original argument we made in the first segment of this program. If you're holding your wealth, if you're storing the work you've put in, the energy you put in, the blood, sweat, and tears you put into your work for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years, however many years you've been working, if you're storing that energy in a piece of paper, we are coming to a time where people are going to learn and the government will have to admit that it can't pay the existing debt. And if you're holding those pieces of paper, you're going to lose your assets. You got a piece of paper that says it's worth $100,000. Yeah, you might get $100,000 for it. But those dollars are only going to purchase about a dime or 20 cents as compared to the dollars that you invested in that piece of paper in the first place. You get 100,000 of them, but it's like getting $100,000 in Monopoly money or Confederate money or the money of Tonga or some other foreign country or something like that. Yeah, we get 100,000. Yeah, they'll see that you get paid, but it won't have the same purchasing power, and you will have lost wealth. The defense against this, again, get into something tangible, all right? And if you want something that's tangible and liquid and an extraordinary buy, you're going to get into gold or silver. Why is it an extraordinary buy? Because the price has been artificially suppressed for 15 years, all right? When they can't control, when they can't pay the debt, this whole thing starts to fall apart. Price of gold, price of silver is going to skyrocket. It may go up, it may go down in the meantime, but we're going to hit the moment when people begin to understand, oh my gosh, my pieces of paper are not going to hold their value. And when people understand that, they will be screaming for gold and silver, at which point prices are going to go high, high, high. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederson. We are back on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to add to the Caterpillar. Also on Thursday, you had the Boeing company. They declined 1.6%, and that was after they secured a record $38 billion deal with China. It's the biggest aircraft deal ever, and yet their shares declined. Plus, you have the president from China having meetings, private meetings with heads of corporations, some of the biggest corporations in the country, and pretty much with a I've got your back type of a message. And I think a lot of what is going on is, I remember we talked about it on this program before, the Export-Import Bank. The authorization for that was not approved by Congress back in July. They were going to try to put it through in the transportation bill, but it didn't happen. And this is a bank where foreign companies would use the agency to buy expensive U.S. products when bank loans are not available. And I think that was part of Caterpillar's cash cow. Over the years after the recession, in order to keep them going, even though their sales have been down four straight years. And now that these foreign companies don't have access to this money, well, you know, Caterpillar's having a little bit more difficult time, and therefore they had to make these announcements. But you had the president of China is promising the heads of Boeing, Microsoft, General Motors, I mean, all of these corporations, Warren Buffett, banking people and so forth, that they have a bright future in China. And Beijing is, with Beijing, committed to market and regulatory reforms that's going to create a level playing field. And I just wonder if China will not have something like the Export-Import Bank.
Well, what would be the difference between China's Import-Export Bank and that of the United States, the former U.S. Import-Export?
Well, you tell me what you're thinking.
I think the difference is the United States is running this on debt, and China actually has some assets. I mean, I'm not sure how China shakes out entirely, but they at least, they say, yeah, we got some cash. I'm thinking from my perspective, and I'm only speculating here, I'm thinking that the reason they're shutting down the Import-Export Bank is in part because the government just can't access, they can't borrow more money. Not easily. I don't mean they can't borrow any, but they can't get it easily, and they're being forced to start trimming because they can't go deeper into debt. They can't get, hey, will you lend me some money? Will somebody lend me some money?
Well,
people saying, no, we're not going to lend you more money.
Well, I mean, that Export-Import Bank, I mean, you know, we're taxpayers are responsible for any bad deals. If a company defaulted on the loan, guess who pays for it? The taxpayer.
I get that. But where does the money come from to be loaned
today? Exactly. And I get that, Al. And I agree with you. It's just like they're trying to defund Planned Parenthood, maybe for different reasons. But again, you know, there's no money there to be paid. But on the other hand, I think this China knows that this is their way to get their foot and get these huge corporations, Microsoft, General Motors, Boeing. You know, you got Warren Buffett in there. You have all these, and we're here to help. China's government is here to say, we're here to help. And part of that deal with Boeing is they're going to build the planes in Seattle, but yet they won't finish them in Seattle. They're going to finish them in a plant in China. And I think this, too, China sees an opportunity to get in here. Now, if they can encourage these corporations, hey, we got your back. We're going to change and reform all our regulations, so it's easier for you to come in here. You could build more plants here. We found a way that we'll, you know, give you credits if you use robots and so forth, where you'll make even more money. And so and also what's interesting about this is the president of China meets these heads of corporation before he even meets with Obama.
Yeah, I know.
And he also told the Chinese corporations, which were in these same meetings, that they have, they're going to invest $1.25 trillion outside the country over the next decade. And so China's president is saying to the Chinese companies, look, you're going to invest $1.25 trillion outside the country over the next decade. And a lot of these Chinese corporations are already major employers of here in the States. And we have 100 Chinese companies that invested in Detroit.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean.
And the problem with that, well, let's get into it another time probably, but the multiplier effect in money, there's the great danger. Always in allowing foreign corporations to come into your community, your state, your nation. They take the profits out, right? And it doesn't sound like much. Yay, China's going to build a plant here in Dallas, Texas, and it's going to give us more jobs. Yeah, it's going to give us more jobs. But here's what's going to happen. It's going to take the profits out of Dallas. And the profits will go back to China. And the economists recognize something called a multiplier effect, where if someone from Chicago in the firemen's union travels to Dallas, Texas to participate in the National Firemen Association convention, and he comes down here and he spends $5,000 while he's on his vacation, right? Dallas, Texas will receive an economic boost equivalent to somewhere between 3 and 7 times the value of the $5,000. He brings $5,000 down, and Dallas gets somewhere between $15,000 and $35,000 in economic stimulus from that new $5,000 coming into the community. Now, this has to be a zero-sum equation. And economists recognize there's a multiplier effect when the money comes in. It's why people fight for tourist dollars. It's why companies, the local chamber of commerce is struggling to get conventions to come into Dallas and Fort Worth, and they're all competing. This is found money, and it stimulates the economy by more, several times the actual face value of the money that's brought in. Has to be a zero-sum equation, meaning that if the guy from Chicago, the fireman from Chicago, comes down to Dallas and he spends $5,000, Dallas might get $35,000 in economic stimulus ultimately out of that $5,000. But it has to be that Chicago will suffer a $5,000 loss when that $5,000 is pulled out of the Chicago economy. Excuse me, a multiplied loss when that $5,000 is pulled out of the economy. Dallas might gain $35,000 in stimulus, but Chicago is going to lose $30,000 to $35,000 stimulus. And the implication is the same principle applies when you're dealing with corporations. You can colonize countries with corporations. You feed them some crapola that there's going to be a trickle-down theory. We're going to build a corporation and a big plant to process crude oil and make plastics and whatever, and we're going to make that investment. The wages will trickle down to your people, and they will become wealthy and more prosperous, and governments buy it. But the whole time that corporation is sucking the profits out of that country, and they're taking it back home or wherever they want to go with it, and wherever it lands gets the multiplied benefit of the profits that are generated by the corporation in a foreign country. You can colonize foreign countries with corporations. Now we've done it ourselves, right? Instead of having colonies the way they did in the 1700s and 1600s and whatever, we don't have colonies per se. We have corporations, and they go out and perform the same function. They feast on countries like vampires. Well, we did that, but now it's being done to us. When China comes in here and says, oh, we'll build a plant, and they're going to make, just pull a number out of the air, they're going to make a plant that's going to make $100 million in profit a year. All right? It means we're going to lose perhaps $300 million in profits in economic stimulus in our economy. These are dangerous agreements, and they are a consequence of going into globalism. They're a consequence of believing that we can create some sort of a viable economy where we don't produce anything. We don't need our own industry. Yes, you do. You need your own industry to keep that money within your own nation.
I think another important part about that, if they did build manufacturing plants here and so forth, not only do they are able to remove the funds, but they also would have access on technology. And sure, this is one area to which they complain about the most, is that there is strict controls on technology exports to China. And a lot of these Chinese companies are, you know, hoping to see these restrictions ease. And one way of easing those restrictions is if you would build your, you know, open plants here. Get that, you know, hey, that would be one of the deals. And then the deal would be, okay, now that we got the technology, we're out of here.
Right. We don't need you anymore.
We don't need you anymore.
We can build it with our own robots. And China is known to be doing this right now. They're purchasing companies that have technology that China wants. And once you're the owner of the company, who can stop you from looking at the company's technology? And then once they see it and take the plans, copies of the plans, whatever, take them back to China, they can make their own.
Which I don't understand. How much reward would they need on technology when they have plants that they can build robots? I mean, you would think they would be just as far advanced on technology.
For the moment, they're not as innovative. It's the one thing America still does well, is innovate. We may not be producing, but we still innovate. And it's something that so far China hasn't been able to emulate, all right? But if they can get copies of the plans and the technology, They can make anything we're making. They learn the little technological secrets and the rest of that sort of thing. No problem. All you need is a lathe, a milling machine. You can make virtually anyone can make the parts if you get the plans.
You know what's interesting, too? You have a Chinese president at the White House. They put up screens to block out the view of protesters during this visit. Now, most of these protesters are protesting human rights. I don't recall when there was a visiting dignitary or a president of another country where you had these demonstrations
I'd like to see the racial breakdown of the people in that demonstration. There are a lot of Asians that are coming into this country, some legally and some illegally. And they would know, if they're coming from China, they would know what's going on. And I'd like to know whether that demonstration was populated primarily by, you know, people who are born in this country, or to what degree are they Asians who know that there's a problem in China and they're trying to get their word heard.
But I don't remember ever a time when there was such demonstrations, when there was, and Obama meets with Putin next week. Regarding Syria, to see Ukraine and Syria as those situations continue to, they don't continue to improve.
No, they fester.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what comes of that. It's something to look forward to next week. What kind of an agreement can we have between Soviet Union and the United States not to step on each other's toes when they're pretty much determined, or at least the United States appears determined, to keep stepping on the Russians' toes? And can we have an agreement? Can we get an agreement with Russia and Syria that doesn't somehow implicate Ukraine? Will the United States sell Ukraine down the river in order to get a more favorable agreement with Russia over Syria? I mean, these dramas are endless, on one level fascinating, on another level almost offensive. You know, it's like people laughing and groaning and grinning at a funeral. You know, you would think that people would have a certain amount of dignity and decorum and some respect, and it doesn't seem to happen. People in positions of power just go out and grab whatever they can grab and hang on tight.
Well, we're going to have to hang on tight. We're just about out of here for the week. And
yep.
I just want to remind folks to give Discount Gold and Silver a call at 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, folks, we're out of time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. We certainly appreciate you tuning in. We hope you'll tune in again next Monday when Melody and I return. In the meantime, have a good weekend, and may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.